Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. It's 4 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. Houston, we've got a winner. So nice to have the Houston Astros be the new World Series champions. I lived there for about a year and 8 months, so I was kind of pulling for them, I got to be honest. And I had a little bit of a similar experience when I was living there. There was a time when it rained so hard, there was so much flooding, that my car at one point was floating. I think I still tried to drive the wheel, like, maybe this will help. I'm thinking, no, it's floating. And of course, then my carpeting was ruined. So I have a little tiny taste of what it's like to be in Houston and have survived kind of a difficult experience. Now, nothing like what they went through with Hurricane Harvey. So that city is celebrating, and what a nice reason to celebrate. What a happy occasion they have. So to all the residents in Houston, way to go. That's very fun that you can enjoy that. Well, we got a great show coming up today. We're going to talk to our friend, Dr. Glenn Pickering. We're going to find out about how we deal with conflicts. And when we handle it poorly, what can we do differently? If we have misdirected anger and we need to break some bad conflict handling habits, he's going to help us do that this morning. So I'm looking forward to that. And then Kim Cotola is going to be with us also in the first hour. And then the second hour, Dr. Peter Kapsner is going to be with us. So that's going to get our day started. It is just about 6 minutes after the hour. We're so glad you're with us. I just love having you on board this morning. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to the show. The other day I had Dr. Glenn Pickering in studio, and I practically insisted that he stick around. So he was nice enough to do that. He's written a book called Playing Tag, The World's Most Common Game, and we're talking about tags in business relationships. And now we're going to talk a little bit this morning about handling conflict poorly. So if you have handled conflict poorly in the past, you're going to want to get a fresh cup of coffee and listen up, because we're going to talk to Glenn about that, and also that ties into the game of tag as well. Glenn, so really, we handle conflict poorly more often than not, don't we?
Yes. In fact, you know, for my day job, I do counseling often with couples, and one of the things I see almost, well, I would just say pervasively, not every time, but very, very often, is that one of their key problems, they'll say we communicate badly or we don't communicate, but they communicate a lot. Many words are getting said, let me tell you that, so it's not that they don't communicate. That's not true. But they do it very, very poorly. They do it in a way such that they never get to resolution. And they'll often tell me, Glenn, everything we talk about turns into an argument. And here's what I know. In any argument between two people, I know the exact number of people who are listening. It's a round number. But I also know the exact number of people who actually have a good point, too. So each person has a good point. They're trying to make their good point. They can see the other person's not listening, so they make their good point louder. Well, and that cycle just continues on, and nobody hears a darn thing. And so when people say we don't communicate, what they really mean is when we argue, we do it really poorly.
Mm-hmm. But you said something which caught my attention, never get to resolution.
Right.
Why would I be interested in getting to resolution if resolution isn't my way?
Well, see, that's the whole thing. In marriage or in any relationship, work relationship, friend relationship, I have to decide, and I could pretend I made this up, but I didn't, about whether you want to be right or do you want to be in right relationship, because mm-hmm. we can't have them both. And honestly, because, you know, I know you've read the book I wrote in the game of tag. When people say, well, Glenn, I just feel I need to be right, what they really, really mean is I really, really, really am afraid of being wrong. I really can't be wrong. It's so painful. It's scary to me to be wrong, et cetera. And so they would literally give up the relationship just to not be wrong. And any of you who are listening, I need you to understand, you feel like you're getting pulled into an argument and you feel like you need to defend yourself or protect yourself, you are literally choosing against the relationship that you are in.
Would you elaborate on that a little bit more? Just because it's kind of profound, and I'm a little bit of a slow thinker.
Well, I know that not to be true, but I'll go ahead anyway. That you have a very fast brain, as we all know. One of the things I think is, I work with couples all the time, and they get caught up in certain decisions, and they're really, really stuck on wanting to make the right decision. But here's what I know. If you're in a couple, friend couple, married couple, work couple, it doesn't matter. Here's the shocking news. The decisions you make don't actually matter. Get a dog, don't. Mow the yard, don't. Paint the house, don't. In the end, none of it matters.
Mm-hmm.
But how you get to the decision, boy, does that matter. If we get to a quote-unquote decision by my being a dictator to my wife or running her over or making her feel unimportant in my attempt to make sure we make the correct quote-unquote decision, remember, that decision anywhere down the road will not matter at all, but my wife will still remember how badly I treated her, how poorly she felt towards me, how unimportant she felt like she was treated by me, and those feelings will linger for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we keep thinking we need to make the right decision. I need you to understand, the decisions you make together don't matter as long as you make them together. But if you don't make them together, oh my goodness, that will literally rip apart the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, let's talk about when you handle conflict poorly and mm-hmm. anger comes into this situation,
right,
into the equation. Let's talk about how it gets presented, whether it's explosive right. sort of anger or passive aggressive, and how both can do such harm.
Yeah. In one of my previous jobs for like 6 years, part of my job was to work with guys who got court ordered to see me because of domestic violence. You know, there's a domestic violence episode of some sort, the police got called. The guy gets taken out of the house and has to go see Glenn Pickering for quote-unquote anger management. And let's just say I had to get coerced into doing that part of my job because I didn't want to do it because I thought, why would I want to work with all those awful, violent people? And, well, let's just be honest. That's what I thought. But let's also be honest. They said if I wanted to keep my job, I was going to do that. So then I did.
Okay. I like your thinking.
Yeah. So I did do that. And here's what I found. I was so, so wrong about 96% of the guys who came to me in that program. There were probably somewhere between 2 or 3 or 4% who really did sort of fit that profile I had in my mind, really violent people who probably needed to be in jail. But 94 or 96 or even 98% of them actually were in that program not because they're overly violent, but because they're so passive. If anger happens on a scale of 1 to 10, and something happens, it's a 1.2. And instead of saying, you know, I don't really like that, I say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow something happens that, you know, we do it the same way we always did. I never really wanted that way. But instead of saying, you know, I've never brought this up, but I kind of wish we'd do this differently, I don't say anything. And after 117 days of never, ever, ever saying what I want, finally somebody doesn't pass the butter dish fast enough, the butter dish goes flying out the window. And people are like, what the heck was that?
Mm.
You just didn't get your way about one little thing and you get this explosion. But see, it was actually 117 explosions packed into one. And so, right, so people would tell me, Glenn, I'm too angry. And again, once in a while, that was actually true. Mostly what I found with all those guys who came through the program is that they didn't have permission to be angry enough. They didn't feel like it was okay to just say, I don't like this. This kind of bugs me. I wish we would do that differently.
Hmm.
And it builds and it builds and it all comes up in that really, really extreme way.
I think of that as the jack-in-the-box theory.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that
you're scared, waiting.
It's that little half turn that makes the little guy pop out.
And which means all the people who live with those volcanoes are walking around all the time wondering which is the next thing that might set off that volcano.
Oh, that's a scary place to live.
I know it is.
I mean, you're on eggshells all the time then.
I know, exactly.
Just paint the floor eggshell white.
Right. And so, but see, here's the weird thing. So is the person who has that quote-unquote explosive problem with anger. So they probably got raised in a family that did anger that same way. They learned to be really afraid of anger, which is why they never speak up because they wouldn't want to be one of those people. So they stuff things until finally they explode and they go, oh my God, I am one of those people. I can't do that. So they work even harder to stuff it down even harder. So next time they go 147 times instead of 117 before they explode, which means they explode even harder.
Mm.
And you can see where that cycle goes.
Boy, Glenn, that's a big one. So this repressed anger and this misdirected anger, is it all part of being passive aggressive?
Yeah. So when people say, well, passive aggressive, I think, well, passive people are always aggressive eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like sort of an oxymoron. Like, well, mm-hmm. yes, passive people will be aggressive. That's what happens in the end.
Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think of how it fits in with things that, you know, you could be a little bugged about, but you're just choosing not to be bugged.
And see, here's the
then
thing.
The next day you wake up and you go, maybe I was bugged about that.
Yeah, see, that's the whole thing. We say we're choosing not to be bugged, but that's really wrong. And so what I did with those guys, almost all those hundreds of guys I worked with over the years, was this. They had no idea how to be what I call small mad. And it's not a real big deal, but that kind of bugs me. Hey, you know, it doesn't have to be this way, but I kind of wish we'd do that differently. How can I say mad in a way that's small? Because all of them got raised in a way where the only way they saw anger was that really loud, explosive way, which they were scared of, so they stuff everything, and then they become one of those people. And so I literally had to teach them how to be mad in a small level. And I had to work with the people in their lives to be open to that. So, for example, we work on this all the time at my house, me and Gwen. We people ask us where we learned all the stuff we know, and we say we were homeschooled. In our home. We had to learn all this stuff in our own relationship. So we had this rule. How can I say it? When I first got married, many people said something like this to me. Glenn, you know, if Gwen does something that really, really bugs you, of course you should talk to her about it. But if it's just a small thing, you should let it go. And you know, on the surface, that seems like good advice, right? It's terrible advice. Because what they're really saying is, Glenn, if you have a really, really big rock in your shoe and it hurts like heck, you should probably stop for a minute and take that out. But you got just a small rock, you should just keep walking on it.
Those are miserable.
I know. And then you get a blister in your foot, right? Then you start walking wrong, which starts pretty soon your knee hurts. And honestly, eventually every part of your body hurts because you didn't take out the dang rock.
Right. Glenn, let me take a break. When we come back, more with Dr. Glenn Pickering. We're talking about anger and how to handle conflict. If you handle it poorly, how to handle it better. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to the show. So glad you're with us. I know you're enjoying this conversation I'm having with Dr. Glenn Pickering. We're talking about handling conflict. So many people do it poorly, and then the anger creeps in, and we're talking about small mad.
Right.
And small mad can turn into blow anger, and that's not good.
No. And so one of the things I was talking about just before break is about how, yes, I worked honestly with those hundreds of guys about how to be small mad, but I worked with other people in their lives about being open to it. So, for example, because my wife, Gwen, and I both grew up in families who didn't actually teach us anything helpful about anger, and it took us a while to figure that out, but not very long, trust me, we realized we needed a new rule. So if either of us came up to the other one and said, I'm kind of upset about this, or I'm sort of mad about this, or I'm a little disappointed about this, the other one had to say, thank you for telling me. That had to be the first thing you said. Because if part of my job is to speak up, that's my 50% of this 50-50 relationship, then part of what I need from you is to be graceful when I do. So a lot of those passive guys were married to women who are used to them being passive. So as soon as they started speaking up, the women thought, oh my gosh, you must be mad at me. Now you don't like me. It's like, no, no, no. I'm just trying to talk about the things I probably should have been talking about the whole darn time. And I don't need you to defend it, which is what we tend to do. If somebody says, Glenn, I'm a little mad that you did blah, blah, blah. I just want you to know, just hear that sentence. Put your name in that. Blank. I'm kind of mad because you can just feel yourself wanting to defend yourself, right? Want to explain yourself. You just feel your body kind of tightening up and the adrenaline kick in. And I want you to think about how incredibly graceful and liberating it is to just say, well, I'm glad you came to me. I'm glad you told me. How should we handle that, do you think?
That sounds civil.
It's way, way past civil, I promise you. It's actually graceful. But what I mean is civil just means I'm trying to be nice or polite. But I'm actually trying these days in my own life to be graceful, like to literally bring grace into that relationship. And, you know, we were talking before about in the work environment, about creating a place that's safe. Well, somebody says, Glenn, I'm a little upset with you or frustrated with you about this. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm glad you could tell me. See, that's part of creating a place where it's safe, because it's safe to be upset or it's safe to disagree. That's a really, really high level of feeling safe. And people are going to function really well in that family and in that work environment.
Glenn, let me ask you this. Yeah. There's the small mad you talk about, which can get into big mad. and, you know, I think men in general have a tendency of maybe being slightly more willing to avoid conflict.
Well, partly it's that we want to avoid conflict, but partly I want to say to each of you guys out there, I want to honor you. See, all of us realize we're supposed to protect the people in our lives. And so we have this instinctive, intuitive thing. I'm not supposed to say that out loud if I'm upset because I'm supposed to protect them. And I want to say to all you guys who are listening, I want to honor that part of you that wants to protect them. It's right and it's good and it's godly. But you need to understand you don't need to protect them from the truth. And in fact, if you do try and protect them by holding back on the truth, in the end, you will be the person they need to be protected from.
Ooh.
And the irony of that is just a little too painful.
But what about a person who might say, I really, I like honesty, but then you give them honesty and then they don't like it?
Yeah.
Let me say, you know, maybe your partner is maybe loud at dinner parties and it's right. a little embarrassing to you and you don't say anything about it.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you say, yeah, you know, you get a little loud at dinner parties and it's mm-hmm. a little embarrassing. And then they just go AWOL.
No, and here's why, because you didn't actually tell your truth. See, my truth is always about me. So if I say, well, you know, sometimes you get a little bit loud, and if you had too much to drink, you get kind of out of control. See, notice, what did I say about myself? Nothing. See, I didn't actually tell my truth. The only truth I know is about myself. So if I talk about them, any sentence that starts with the word you, I promise you is going to trigger that game of tag, because the other person is going to feel criticized and evaluated, because that is what's happening. Mm-hmm. Or I could say, you know, hon, I know you're outgoing and you're way more social than I am. Sometimes I get a little uncomfortable when blah, blah, blah happens. Notice I'm not judging you. I'm just telling you what happens for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then when people say, I just tell it like it is, I think, no, you don't. You always just want to talk about everybody else. You're always taking everybody else's inventory. And one of the first things you learn in any 12-step program is to take your own goddamn inventory.
Why is our default then to go after the person when we think we're being so constructive with our criticism, when we're not speaking our truth?
I think, honestly, just to go back to the game of tag, you know, the whole goal is to not be it. Well, if you do something wrong and I make a real point of pointing that out to you, so you are clearly in the wrong. You know who's not it? Me.
Mm. So I have to chew on that a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of times when people say, well, I was just trying to be helpful, I think, no, you weren't. You're just trying to make somebody else the bad one. It's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to be helpful, you would be constructive. You would be doing what we talked about in the last seminar or last session about looking for what people do right, because we all learn more from what we do right than we do from people criticizing what we do wrong. The mm-hmm. data is really clear.
Mm-hmm. All right, Glenn, what if you have a pretty consistent long history of doing things, handling conflict poorly, and now all of a sudden I'm listening to this radio show, driving to work, and I think, when I get home tonight, I'll try this new technique I learned.
Thanks. Then the first thing you do is you start by saying to the other person, you know, hon, that Glenn Pickering is an amazing person. No, I'm just kidding. I just think
I can also read what
that's
you wrote.
Right. Exactly.
Glenn Pickering is an amazing person.
That's
there you
right.
go.
I got it.
Now I said it.
But here's what you actually want to do for real. When Jesus said, why do you see the speck in your brother's eye? You don't see the log in your own eye. If I can tell that me and my wife, or me and my kid, or me and my friend, or whatever, are in wrong relationship in some way, and I can see it's because I've been kind of too attacking or holding back or whatever it is that I've been doing, I'm going to start out that conversation by saying, hon, I know we've had some icky conversations in the past, and I want to take responsibility for my half of that. I can see that I need to do my part differently. Notice, I'm not saying, oh my gosh, it's all my fault, because nothing ever actually is. But I'm also not saying it's all your fault, because nothing ever actually is.
Mm-hmm.
It's me and you. So I'm going to come home and I'm going to say, you know, I see that. I see what I've been doing wrong there. And I want to do my part differently, which will very likely lead to a pretty positive conversation about that.
Unless they say, well, finally, you've seen what you're doing wrong.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden your blood pressure goes up.
That might just very well happen. And so I would just inoculate all of you who are listening to think, yeah, that might happen. And if it does, just remember to stay the course, because this is the person who's used to playing tag with you. So you're doing it differently. You're just coming in and just being honest and vulnerable. And it's kind of understandable if their first reaction is to keep playing tag, because that's been their habit with you for, you know, the last 10,000 interactions. So it shouldn't be a shock to you if that might come out of their lips at first. So even if somebody does say, well, yeah, it's about time, then I'm going to use the word we in the next sentence, or us. So I would really like it if we started working on that. I think between the two of us, we can really do this thing better. Are you up for that? I'm just going to invite them into that process with me. Because mm-hmm. here's what I know. We all want to be on the team. We all powerfully, powerfully, powerfully want to be on the team.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody kind of relentlessly invites us, we're very likely to come.
And Glenn, you have a relationship marriage seminar coming up in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, December 2 and 3.
Yep.
Where might I go find information about that.
Thank you. On my brand new website, which I'm really loving, glennpickering.com.
Two N's.
Yes, thank you. Glenn with two N's. Thank you. Yes, I'm really excited about that website, and I'm really excited about that seminar coming up. It's going to be really powerful. And people who come to that tell me it's really a life-changing experience.
Yeah. And maybe if you start down the road of this conversation about trying to improve, handling your conflicts better, by the time you get to December 2 and 3, you might be at the perfect place.
That's right. You might be all set to learn a whole bunch more new stuff.
Yeah. I always learn a lot, Glenn, when you come in. Thanks so much for being in studio. Dr. Glenn Pickering.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
At glennpickering.com. You can also email him directly with a question, Glenn at glennpickering.com. We'll take a short break and be back with more of the show in just a minute. That's what we have, day at a time. That's the way God ordained it, one day at a time. It's half past the hour. We'll take a little break for news, and then Kim Cattola is going to be with us from Cradle My Heart Radio. Be back in a minute.
We are sharing each day together.
The world is not helping our faith increase, but Faith Radio presents us with truths, and our soul needs nothing more than to have the truth presented on such a regular basis to encourage us, to lift us up, to let us know that we're not alone in the midst of our trials. So Faith Radio is a lifeline to me, and I know that confidently if people are seeking the truth, it's invaluable to just developing fellowship and communion with the Lord.
Thanks for being part of the family of Faith Radio.
Good morning. It's 25 minutes until the top of the hour. John Eldredge is always a busy author. He's always writing books. His latest one, or one that he has written in his repertoire, is Moving Mountains, Praying with Passion, Confidence, and Authority. He says prayer is a key element of the Christian life, and yet he has found that a lot of Christians don't fully understand how to pray. Let's listen as he shares some more.
I think the big surprise is that prayer is actually something you learn, just like you learn how to read or drive a car or play an instrument. This is kind of a big idea here, because I think most people kind of look at prayer as it's something that you just kind of catch, like, you know, the measles. You just kind of do it. It just sort of happens to you, you know. And it's not a very kind approach to our own spiritual life. It puts a lot of expectation on us that somehow we ought to just know how to do it. And the first big idea is the disciples said to Jesus, teach us how to pray. Like, we want to grow in this. We want to learn in this. They obviously saw something in him and in his prayers. They're like, hey, your prayers work. Like, show us how. And I love that. It opens up all kinds of new possibilities when you realize, oh, you mean prayer is something you learn?
So true, John. I appreciate that. If you want to hear all that interview, head over to myfaithradio.com. Type in Moving Mountains, or John Eldredge. Take a short break, and then Kim Cattola is with us.
If pastors don't present the biblical answers to society's problems, who will? This is Jim Garlow. Several years ago, I hosted more than 50 speakers for a conference to address the biblical understanding regarding racial healing, prison reform, immigration, same-sex marriage, and many other societal issues. We had one concern: what are the biblical answers for these societal problems? And if the Bible has answers, why should we, as pastors, be afraid to speak out on these issues? Are we afraid to be labeled political? I do speak out from the pulpit on these issues, but let me be clear. My hope is not in any political party. My friend Sammy Rodriguez, a pastor and one of the most influential Latino leaders in the country, said it best. Our hope is not in the donkey or the elephant, but in the lamb. Find out more at jimgarlow.com.
Happy Thursday. So glad you're with us this morning. It's 22 minutes till the top of the hour. I always love Thursdays. Get to talk to Kim Cattola from Cradle My Heart Radio, and she is on our studio line this morning. Good morning, Kim.
Hey, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Good. I loved having you in studio, and it's always nice to hear your voice on the phone.
You know what? I really am still sort of on my pink cloud from that visit in studio. I learned a lot. I really did.
That was very fun. Yeah, it was great. So let's get into some pro-life news. This was an interesting issue that the judge was halting California law forcing pro-lifers to advertise abortions. Why would pro-lifers advertise abortions?
Because abortion providers went to the legislature in California in 2015 and said, hey, they're taking business from us. Oh, wait, no, it wasn't that straightforward. But essentially, that is what happened. California is one of the few states that does pay for abortions through Medicaid. And so I think that it's Medi-Cal is the name of their program. So they did see that pregnancy centers were having an impact on abortions in the state. And some have raised concerns, Bill, that pregnancy centers are deceiving women because they will operate in close proximity to abortion businesses. They will advertise with a lot of the same terminology that abortion providers will advertise with. And so people were saying that they were doing this specifically to mislead women. You know, you wonder what the end game would be there because there's no profit motive. They're nonprofit centers and they offer their services free of charge.
Right.
So it's sort of a, I don't know, it's a very specious charge that's being made against pregnancy centers. But they were being required to post notice that if you wanted an abortion, you didn't have to come to this center. You could go to Medi-Cal and get the state of California to pay for one for you. So that's being argued. The case is being drawn up for the Supreme Court. It will be heard, I hope, maybe this fall. But this decision at the state level means that those pregnancy centers, in particular in Los Angeles, where this law was being enforced, will not have to speak against their conscience. And that was what's at stake here, Bill. You know, a pregnancy center was being required to refer for abortion, which makes them part of that abortion. And so it's a great ruling. And I really loved the coverage in Pregnancy Help News about this because one of the attorneys on the case said, you know, she had a personal stake in it. She said she was a pregnant teen and was urged to abort. And she said, now that I'm a mother, I know that I wish I had not done that. The young attorney is not a Higuera. She argued the case before Judge Trask, and the female judge, Judge Trask, said, look, Gloria Trask in the Riverside County Superior Court, she said, look, you can't make them speak against their conscience. That's un-American. That's against the Constitution. So we'll see what happens at the Supreme Court level, but lives will be saved because of the ruling. And I think it's a victory for all of us, Bill, with Christian values who want to have the ability to add our voices to the conversation in the public square.
Yeah, and now it's headed to the Supreme Court, so it's amazing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Alliance Defending Freedom is on this case, and they're working with the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates. NIFLA sponsors pregnancy centers. And they're waiting for the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, to take up a statewide appeal to that law. And, you know, laws like this, Bill, have been enacted all over the country, and they've always been struck down. Every time they get challenged, they're struck down because they violate free speech rights. They were struck down in Washington, D.C., in Baltimore, in Austin, Texas, in Maryland. And in that case, the people who were pressing for that law had to actually pay almost $500,000 in attorney fees. Still, laws like this are being proposed in Illinois and Hawaii. And I hope in each case that they won't stand because they violate free speech.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kim, this the unauthorized 17-year-old girl from Central America had her abortion, but I have a feeling there's a bigger battle out there as a result of this.
Well, yeah. And Bill, the coverage that I've seen on this, there's a lot on this story if you want to read it, and there's a lot to wade through. But it's very sad, of course, that the ACLU chose this young woman as their sacrificial lamb because they want to conflate abortion rights with immigration rights. And so on Twitter, you had Justice for Jane and then the macabre victory dance when the abortion was completed.
Mm-hmm.
And but I like the coverage at the National Catholic Register, which really brought into focus what's at stake here and how the ACLU was able to get this done, because it was going back and forth in the courts. But they got a stay, and she had the abortion at 4:30 in the morning, according to one of the reports. So they spirited her away and the baby is gone. Two people came across the border, and one had his or her life violently ended. And that's the sad pass that we're at. But the ACLU was looking for a case, and now they intend to, try to secure abortions for other undocumented people here in the U.S., other undocumented women here in the U.S. who may be pregnant. And if you care about this, if you have a heart about this, I would, pray. We need to pray about it, Bill. And we also need to make our opinions known in places where it will matter, because the thing that was at stake here was whether or not she was actually in the U.S. And she was not. She was apprehended trying to enter. And then, the people who were saying that she should not be afforded an abortion at U.S. expense, said, let's get her a sponsor. They couldn't even locate anyone connected to her in the United States. And so that's the fear, Bill, is that we'll become an abortion destination.
Right.
And anyone from anywhere in the world can come here and legally have an abortion paid for by the United States government.
Is it like Roe v. Wade 2.0? We're just trying to expand to people who are not citizens of our country to pay for their abortions?
Well, many of the attorneys close to this have said that there's no precedent for that, but that this case could provide guidance if someone wanted to establish that precedent. And beyond the personal tragedy, because I can tell you as a person who's experienced abortion, she's going to have consequences down the line somewhere. She's been traumatized because every abortion is a traumatic experience, because it's a You're present when another life is lost, Bill. You can't escape that consequence, that there is trauma and you're going to have to deal with it. And for a 17-year-old away from home, again, with no one to sponsor her but her ACLU attorneys, I really, really pray for this young woman's future. But yeah, there's no precedent that was set here, but the ACLU is hoping to build one upon it.
Kim, let me take a short break. When I come back, I want to ask you about some of these false reviews that are slandering pro-life centers as fake abortion clinics. Has Google done the right thing getting those removed? We'll continue our conversation with Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio in just a minute. It's 14 minutes till the top of the hour. Good morning. 12 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm still with Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio. We're talking about pro-life issues. And Kim, Google is removing false reviews that are slandering pro-life centers. They're calling them fake abortion clinics.
And this has been something that's been going on for a good long while, Bill, because it goes back to the actions in California to try to shut down the pregnancy help movement, because the pregnancy help movement, Bill, is having an impact. And I want to amend something I said in the earlier segment, that this woman's going to suffer because she's been traumatized, the Jane Doe in the case in Texas. Everyone who has had an abortion will suffer because abortion is a sin. Let me be really clear about that. There are a lot of people, Bill, who will say they have no emotional reaction to an abortion, or that it was relief, or that it was a net good in their lives. Mm-hmm. And, your emotions may tell you that, but God's word cannot lie. Abortion is a sin. It is the shedding of innocent blood. And that's where we will have to deal with our consequences. And so that's why this matters to me so much. It's not that I want to abridge anybody's rights. It's that I care about your eternal life. And if you are not cognizant, if you will not own the fact that this is a sin and that you need redemption, that you need forgiveness, that you need God's righteousness through Jesus Christ, you're really in big trouble. Really big trouble. So that's why I speak, Bill. And yeah, the move to protect abortion by shutting down the pregnancy help movement and claiming they're fake clinics, it's gotten a renewed effort from Liz Winstead's group, the Lady Parts Justice League. And so they're doing all sorts of hacktivism. They go out in front of pregnancy centers and protest, and they do all sorts of outrageous things, and they have rallied their troops to go put fake reviews on Pregnancy Center websites or on Pregnancy Center umbrella organization websites. And the organization, they're not very slick about it though, because it's cut and paste. So it's very easy to track that it's a fake review.
Mm-hmm.
Google wants you to review something you've actually experienced, not something that you're just against.
Yeah. So is Google kind of doing the right thing here by getting these taken off the website?
I'm happy to say that they are in this case.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that if you can present your case that someone is, you know, trolling you and someone is abusing the Google review process, Google in this case has done the right thing. Heartbeat International showed that Access Columbus was one of the people that was posting these reviews. And it was, as I said, kind of a cut and paste. It said, this religious facility masquerading as a medical facility. This is a fake clinic. Well, yeah. So, and Google saw that with the one-star review that they removed at least 40 of them, because this person couldn't possibly have gone from Columbus, Ohio, all the way up to, I think, Toronto, in the 40 cases that they found. So, you know, but it's a hassle, Bill, for these clinics and the pregnancy centers, many of which are medical clinics. It's a hassle for them to have to chase that down and remove those reviews. But when they have taken the work to do that, Google has done the right thing in this case.
Mm-hmm. Kim, another disturbing news, Planned Parenthood in the black community tweeted out something I thought was awful.
Oh, boy. Yeah, this caused a real firestorm this week because Scary Stats, hashtag Scary Stats, mm-hmm. was a Twitter campaign. Then I think, I'm sorry, I don't know the exact roots of it, but I know that many in the pro-life community were tweeting out scary stats about abortion. But the Planned Parenthood Black Community Twitter page tweeted out that if you're a black woman in America, it's statistically safer to have an abortion than to carry a pregnancy to term or give birth. Now, some people said, look, you got to take that in context, that they were talking about, you know, reproductive health for black women in general, and saying that, you know, that they were trying to make a point about maternal mortality.
I don't know if I know what that means.
Well, so what that means is if you're in favor of improving women's health, you should be working to make sure that pregnancy and childbirth aren't lethal experiences for women. That's the maternal mortality rate.
Okay.
And so they're saying that, you know, not enough attention is being paid to black women's overall reproductive health. But to tweet this out, that abortion is statistically safer without any context to the average woman reading it, it sure looks like they're advocating abortion over pregnancy and childbirth. It doesn't look like they're advocating for healthy pregnancy and childbirth at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there was a lot of blowback. And they painted themselves in a corner because they can't really defend the fact that Planned Parenthood is responsible in part for the fact that more black babies are aborted than born in Manhattan, for example, every year. Abortion in the black community is a real problem. It happens disproportionately. While blacks make up fewer than 20% of the population, they have almost 40% of the abortions. And many in the black community argue that that's because they are being targeted because of race. And Planned Parenthood, the black community, has not done very much to answer that, nor to really stand up and say, you know, let's do better for black women than suggesting that abortion is the answer to their problems, including poverty or whatever else, you know, black women are facing. Let's give real support.
Kim, when it says abortion advocates say that abortion is less likely to kill you than going through pregnancy and childbirth, do women nowadays kind of think that having a baby, I'm really running the risk of dying?
Of course not. You know, of course not. And it's a specious argument. It's very hard to make a comparable analogy between childbirth and abortion. The Centers for Disease Control said the statistics are dicey at best.
Mm-hmm.
Those statistics don't take into account damage via abortion, such as the perforated uterus and other things that can impair fertility in the future. They don't take into account you know, the lives lost to medical abortions, which how would anybody even know? Sometimes those women take those medications in secret, but there are at least 400 documented cases of medical abortions causing the deaths of young women, especially teens, Bill, because they often take those pills in secrecy. And then when the bleeding begins, they don't seek help soon enough. I mean, I'm sorry, that's awful news to be talking about maybe before breakfast for some of us. But if you're going to talk, if you're going to make a comparison between abortion and childbirth, we need to get the whole picture. And it's very difficult to do that because abortion isn't regulated and there's no mandatory reporting, among other factors. So, yeah, to try to make that comparison and encourage women that abortion is safe, I think that's the bottom line, Bill. They're trying to encourage women that, okay, if you want an abortion, don't worry, it's safe.
Right.
And they can't promise that because it's not true.
Yeah. Well, I'm always reminded when I speak to you to get on my knees and pray for all the young women that are headed towards an abortion clinic today that they'll change their mind. And ones that are going to a pregnancy crisis center will be talked into keeping their baby.
Amen to that, Bill, because the spirit has to move, and it is a spiritual battle.
Exactly. And I don't mind getting on my knees ever for the life of the unborn in the mama's wombs.
And the mamas, too.
And the mamas, of course.
I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about it because, the conversation needs to be had as difficult as it is at times.
Yeah. All right, Kim, I'll talk to you next week. Have a great day.
Appreciate you, Bill. You too. Have a good one.
Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio. We'll take a short break and then be back in a minute. Thank you to Kim Cotola. She gave us possibly the word of the day, which was specious. Superficially plausible, but actually wrong. Misleading in appearance, especially misleadingly attractive. Anyway, second hour coming up, Dr. Peter Kapsner is already in the green room lurking. There he is. He's outside lurking right now. And we'll talk to him in just a minute. Then Dr. Ann Bradley is going to be with us. Be back for hour two in just a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.